podcasts. It's like radio, but it's not on the radio. Hogan
Johns. We will be perfect in every aspect of the game.
Obsession. Being obsessed. Anything that you do, if there's an obsession with it, you realize that obsession. Good things come from that.
WGN Radio's very own Adam Hogue.
Let loose and just have some fun as you go about winning.
And the Chicago Sun-Times, Adam Johns.
Hot route! Bears 7! Hot route!
Bring you Chicago's best Bears coverage.
There's a different vibe around the building.
Obsession.
Everyone's just coming to work every day excited.
Being obsessed.
And that's what it's all about.
And now,
what time is it?
Here they are.
Perfection.
Hogan Johns.
What's up? Welcome in from Bourbon A, a live podcast. Good to do one of these again. Oh man, these people are so excited. Look at them. They're just staring at us.
It's hot. It's very hot.
You guys picked the hottest day at camp so far to come out here.
It's in the 90s. Yeah, by far the hottest day.
We at least got you this tent and some shade.
Some of you. Move closer. It's okay. We won't bite.
It's also Urlacher Day here in Bourbon A, and no one in the crowd right now has an Urlacher jersey. We got three Trubiskys in the front row. Is that a Josh Bellamy jersey?
Brandon Marshall.
Bellamy would be pretty sweet. I just like the irony of it would be cool. Welcome in. This is the Hogan Johns podcast. Johnsy's back from Canton. I was in Chicago all weekend, but back here in Bourbon A. You can follow us on Twitter at Adam Hogue, H-O-G-E, at Adam Johns, J-A-H-N-S. Our producer is Joe Romano.
See, I got this friend named Joey Jojo Jr. Shabadoo.
That's the worst name I ever heard.
Oh, no!
Hi! Joey Jojo!
And the great thing about being out here live in front of you guys is that our engineer is Ernie Skatton, who's the man who put together our open and then the voice that you hear on our open. So he's a part of our podcast, too, and it's good to have him out here as well. Of course, Absolutely. You can read us at WGNradio.com/Bears. I got my 10 Bears Things column is up right now, some reaction from the game the other night. Of course, we're going to discuss that here, and you can read JohnZChicagoSunTimes.com. How is Canton, buddy?
Not too bad. A little hot, a little steamy.
Was it hotter than here?
No. Not as bad as here. I think the best story there, if I could share this story, I'm going to pat myself on the back for this one. And I heeded the advice of the great Dan Pompey, the Hall of Fame, former Chicago Tribune, Chicago Sun-Times sports writer. So everybody was traveling to Cleveland and Canton for the Hall of Fame game. So they were offering vouchers, and big-time vouchers. We're not talking about a couple hundred bucks. We're talking about a $1,200 worth of vouchers to travel to.
Wow.
So this is my story from Canton. It's taking that $1,200 voucher. Instead of flying into Cleveland and renting a car, they put me on a later flight to Canton, directly into Canton. So absolutely. That's my story from Canton.
So you got $1,200.
A closer flight, no rental car. And I still made the game.
That's his veteran move right there.
Yeah, that's my story from camp.
Now, did you actually?
The Bears also played, yes.
Yeah, well, I mean, technically they did. It was on TV,
yes.
I think. And no, we're going to get into the game as well. Actually, I saw a lot of things in the game that I like. But the real question is, did you book far enough in advance to get a room anywhere near Canton?
No. So we were kind of far,
yeah.
Kind of closer to Cleveland. So we ended up still having to get a car.
Okay.
Well. We're here.
It's a weird place to have a thing like a Hall of Fame.
There's not much around.
I get why it's there, but it's weird for, you know, fans, and there's really not hotels and things like that. But whatever. It seemed like a cool. Certainly, been following everything on Brian Urlacher. We're going to talk about Brian Urlacher a little bit later on in this podcast. Bob Laguerre, who I think has been at more Bears training camps than anybody from Pro Football Weekly, is going to sit down and talk to us a little bit about his time covering Urlacher. You and I caught like the last two or three years, technically, reporting here on this team. Of course, we saw his whole career. So it's a cool thing that he's going into Canton today, and today is Brian Urlacher Day. All right, so let's jump into this game the other night. You were there. I had the weird experience of watching it on TV from home, which I'm not used to.
Mm-hmm.
I had a White Sox post game to handle the same day. My wife even said as the game was kicking off, she's like, "It's really weird to have you home right now." I was like, "Do you want me to leave?" I mean, I'm fine doing that.
So what'd you do?
No, I stayed there.
You worked even harder.
Yeah, I worked. I stayed up till 1 a.m. writing. I was probably writing longer than you did if you were at the game.
Yeah, you did. You tweeted more. That's for sure.
Yeah, you didn't tweet at all during the game.
No.
You just took the preseason off?
It's still, yeah. We got four more of these, Adam.
Okay.
Four more of these.
All right. Well, I don't know if I was just excited about football being back, but everyone was complaining about the game the other night. I actually enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, I thought we learned a few things, actually.
Yeah.
You kind of learn who's kind of moved themselves up the roster by not playing.
Yeah, I mean, that's the biggest thing. Yeah. I mean, the fact that Anthony Miller...
Absolutely, I was going to go there.
...didn't even play a snap was... I was like... At first, I was like, does he have some injury we don't know about? But then, no, it seemed pretty obvious that he was just getting starter-like treatment. And he was back out there today on the field. Those of you guys here in front of us today saw him make a great catch in the end zone. From our vantage point, I wasn't even sure if that was a Hail Mary drill or were they just like a broken down play? It was kind of weird. But anyway, Trubisky bombed one down like 45 yards and he went up and caught the ball. There's no question that dude, Anthony Miller, has impressed the coaches so far and is going to be a big part of this team.
I am buying everything he is selling. He is not a flash in the pan by any means here. And this is, with all due respect, the Daniel Bravermans, even the Tanner Gentrys, who haven't been too bad here at camp either. He's for real.
Yeah.
He's a second-round pick they traded up for. It's his footwork. It's his route running. He's just very polished. It's his hands. He could go up and get it, too. Just a phenomenal training camp thus far for him.
Did you have any issues at all with the playing time that was or was not distributed the other night?
If, in terms of Anthony Miller, if Mitch Trubisky's not playing, Anthony Miller should not be playing. If there was one receiver I thought should get some action, Kevin White.
Yeah, that's
what
I thought,
too. He needs action.
Yeah. And then, like, I tweeted that out during the game, and a lot of the responses I got were, well, you got to protect him from injuries. Well, how is he supposed to play in the regular season if you're so scared of playing him in the preseason because he might get hurt? I mean, at some point, the dude has to be on the field. And I don't know. I thought that was somebody who, no matter who's at quarterback, whether it's Trubisky or Chase Daniel or Tyler Bray, he just needs game experience.
Yeah. And if you just want to compare his route running to what Anthony Miller is doing, Anthony Miller looks like the three-year veteran. Kevin White does not. Obviously, he had to learn more coming out of West Virginia. Memphis ran a different offense for Anthony Miller. He was asked to do different things. But even now, you see it here in Bourbonnais. Who's the more polished route runner? Anthony Miller. So the more work that Kevin White could get, even with the Chase Daniel for the first half, even for a series or two, get him out there, and it helps with his confidence as well, considering his injury history.
One of the things I talked to Anthony Miller about last week that really impressed me was just he seems to be more concerned about what he's doing off the practice field in terms of understanding the playbook, knowing that, hey, if I don't know the plays, if I don't know the play calls, if I'm not lined up properly, I'm not going to be on the field. And he's staying after, he's working with Mitch Trubisky on the details of his route running, but as good as he's looked in practice, I'm just impressed that he seems to understand everything else that needs to go into being a wide receiver in the NFL.
I love his mentality. I talked to him, I think, the first day of training camp. He told me, I didn't come here to sit. Not whatsoever. I came here to play, and he's doing everything he can to play. And it's the extra work, like you said. It's tracking down Mitch Trubisky, who's staying up to 9 or 10 at night watching film. It's hanging out with him late in his dorm room and going over certain things. It's talking about their chemistry and how he likes back shoulder balls and things like that. So it's good. It's promising. Now, it is just the training camp here. We've seen people come and go, but I'm very encouraged. Again, I am buying everything Anthony Miller is selling. He's for real.
And I like his attitude. He doesn't lack any confidence. You guys heard that interview we ran last week with him where he's like, I'm not just some rookie here to try and get on the field. I know that I'm supposed to be making big plays, and that's what he intends to do. So how about Javon Wims, though?
Yeah.
Because he's not the second-round pick. He's the seventh-round pick, which is where Daniel Braverman was picked a few years ago. And I think there's a little bit more hesitation to buy into what a guy's, you know, when he explodes and has, what was it, 7 catches, 89 yards were the final numbers the other night.
He was good.
But he looked pretty good. So then the question becomes, how much do you buy what he did, considering, all right, he's going up against backups, it's the first preseason game. We've seen this from Daniel Braverman. We've seen this from Dane Sonsenbacher.
Ooh, there's a name.
Yeah. And even Tanner Gentry last year.
I'd be less encouraged if he wasn't doing it out here.
That's the thing. I was already... Before that game kicked off, I had like 200 words written on him about how he'd already impressed me on the field. Mm-hmm. And it's for different reasons than like last year when Gentry was out here making circus catches and things like that. I'm more impressed with the size. Like, the first day he put the pads on out here, I had to, like, do a double check on the roster because I was like, who's that giant wide receiver? He has the size. He has, I mean, the knock on him, I think, was the speed.
Right.
But he has enough speed. And then another knock, and Nagy even mentioned it after the game as something he needs to work on, is the route running. But I thought in that game the other day, his routes were really good, especially for those of you, if anybody was still watching with 2 minutes left, I hope you weren't, but we're paid to do that, so I was still watching. Fourth and six, the Bears are trying to get that last touchdown. As a, you know, in a big moment of any game, it's fourth and six. You don't get it, the game's over. He ran a nice slant, perfect route, got open, and got the first down. I was impressed by him the other night.
He was Georgia's leading receiver, a team that went to the national championship. Loaded team. He's got talent. I think he's got some underrated talents as well. He has, again, we mentioned Tanner Gentry and his go up and get it ability. Javon Wims has the same.
Yeah.
If not, maybe a little bit better because he's bigger, a little bit faster, and all that.
Well, his ability to box out.
Yes. And, yes. And he's got
pluck
basketball
the ball
experience.
Out of
yes.
the air.
Yes.
A little bit like Alshon Jeffery always did.
Yes. And well, Alshon Jeffery was the fastest. We're talking about a second round pick. I think he's kind of an underrated selection. Now, I'm not going to say he's going to make the team. I think that five, six wide receiver spot is kind of wide open, and they are going to give Kevin White every single opportunity to win himself a role on this team. He's still getting it.
But here's why I think that's interesting that Wims has a game like he did the other night. Because if that continues, and it continues on the practice field, and on the flip side, Kevin White, I mean, he didn't even play the other night, so we can't criticize him.
Yeah.
But if he fails to show that type of production as the preseason goes along, and this is like just hypothetical because we don't know if that's going to happen or not, it could create a situation that I was doubting, you know, in the summer when we talked about it. Any scenario where Kevin White doesn't actually make this team.
Well, here's where the preseason may work against Kevin White when he plays against the Bengals or the Chiefs later on. When he's on the field with Trubisky, he is not his best option. When Tyler Bray was slinging the ball around, Javon Wims was his best option.
Sure.
Him and Tanner Gentry were his number one and number two guys. When Mitch Trubisky is out there, he's going to have Trey Burton. He's going to have Allen Robinson. He's going to have Tariq Cohen, who is everywhere, doing everything in this offense. Even Jordan Howard's getting a significant amount of targets here in Bourbonnais. So Taylor Gabriel, Anthony Miller. We go on and on and on. Where does Kevin White fit within those starting pieces? I don't know if he's going to get the opportunity to do what Javon Wims did just based on being down the depth chart.
Well, it's just you look at the number of wide receivers you usually keep, and it's usually at least almost all, well, definitely
it's always five.
Four, and then five, I think, with this offense and how many guys they're going to need to use, probably five would be the minimum. And then if you have a guy who can also play special teams.
Well, there's Josh Bellamy.
Like Josh Bellamy, it could be six. So, I mean, you just start to count it. I mean, Allen Robinson's obviously on this team. Taylor Gabriel's obviously on this team. Anthony Miller's obviously on this team. Kevin White right now is listed as a second teamer on the depth chart. And then after that, you get to Javon Wims and Josh Bellamy. That's why, I mean, for somebody like Tanner Gentry, this seems like an uphill battle for sure. Benny
Even
Fowler.
For Wims, yeah.
Benny Fowler, who had those drops the other night, that doesn't help him. It's just, I could see them keeping six wide receivers, but that's usually a lot.
Well, because Bellamy,
right.
He's one of your core special teamers. He's on every single phase. It's I don't want to sound like I'm ragging on White. I think I've said this every single podcast. He's actually had some very good moments here in Bourbonnais. He's shown some of the speed. I mean, this is the best I've seen of him since he's been with the Bears.
Yeah.
And I think that says plenty right there, but I don't want to completely write him off. You know the Bears aren't. Again, you know they're going to give him every single opportunity to impress. They've invested a lot in him financially and with the 7th overall pick a few years ago.
By the way, I should mention to those of you who are here in the audience, and we are in Bourbonnais at Bears training camp, a live edition of Hogan Johns. We're willing to take questions from you guys if you want to ask. We got a wireless mic over here. Joe Romano, our producer, can get it to you, so just let him know if you want to ask us something at any point. We're more than happy to do that.
Just keep it clean.
Yeah, that's, well, we're not on the radio, though, so you technically don't have to keep it clean.
Okay.
And we'll just
you're really going to get
and
it.
And we'll just bleep it out.
Have at it.
Tell us how you really feel about us. What did you think about Nagy's coaching the other night?
No real thoughts, really. To be honest with you,
I mean that's a good thing. Yeah, it wasn't like there was any glaring errors.
I like that he went for it on fourth down. You know, he got tested with the timeouts here and there. I like his aggressiveness and the 2-point conversion. Is he going to be like that in the regular season? Probably not. For as much as anybody, the preseason is especially important for him because he gets to communicate with Mark Helfrich, all his coaches. He's never done this before, and he gets 5 games to do it. So he was happy with it. I didn't see any issues with anything. No real thoughts, no real complaints. But I think he gets these games, and he's going to benefit from these games.
Yeah, I think situationally, right at the end of the first half, he got tested a little bit and handled it pretty well. He did something that John Fox always refused to do, call timeout when the other team had the ball so that they could try to get it back. Then he had the interesting, and I'm going to forget the exact specifics here in yardage, but he could have declined a penalty that would have made it fourth down, but he was afraid that the Ravens would go for it then because it was short, and I don't know, maybe because it's the preseason too. They were in their own territory, so I don't know if that would happen in the regular season. So instead, he declined the penalty, made it third and longer, and I think they ended up punting.
Yeah,
right?
We have a lot to learn about how Nagy manages games and makes his.
But he has a lot to learn just from going through that. Yeah. I mean, that's really the first time he's dealt with that.
Just based off what we've heard from him, he's always going to have that aggressive mindset. That's how he wants to be as a coach. That's how he wants his team to play. That's the culture he wants to create with the Bears. So if he goes for it on fourth and short, if he is more aggressive in those situations, if he wants to call a timeout when the opposing offense is on the field to get the ball back for Mr. Trubisky and company, then I'm all for it because that play it safe, whatever you want to call the John Fox era, we all saw that, how that ended.
And then we also saw how he interacts with the officials. I don't think he's going to be a guy that's in their face the whole game complaining about every call, but he did get upset about that the defenseless receiver penalty, the unnecessary roughness call in the end zone. Seemed to have some choice words for the officials, and then after the game backed it down a little bit to the media. So that's a professional.
Well, that was not the new helmet rule.
No, fact, it was not.
That was targeting and launching, he said later, which looks like the new helmet rule. It's going to be confusing for everybody.
That's why, and what I wrote after the game on that is the referee on the field needs to do a better job of communicating what the specifics are of the call. Because on the first two, when it was the helmet rule, Walt Coleman referred to use of helmet. The last two, which were just defenseless receiver calls, he didn't say defenseless receiver. So everybody thought it was the helmet rule, and everyone thought it was those were terrible calls, which they would have been with the new helmet rule. So it's going to be confusing, and everybody's going to have problems with it. But I think the NFL could help themselves a little bit by being a little bit more clear.
You done? We got a question.
Yeah, I know. I see that. What's your name, sir?
My name's Ken. I'm here with my wife on her 39th anniversary.
Oh, round of applause for
that. What kind of a wife goes to the Bears training camp?
That's why you've been together for 39 years.
Well, that may be true. I'm wondering when we're going to see Roquan Smith. What do you think is... How's that going to play out?
Go ahead, John.
Oh, yeah. It's... I don't want to say negotiations are contentious, but they've reached the point of, you know, WTH or WTF, whatever you use. It's like, what the heck is going on, right? It's problematic on both sides right now. And we were talking before the show. Look, we know it's more than the new helmet rule right now. Negotiations are beyond that. There's some behavior language, on the field behavior language, that's now part of discussions. And this could take some time. He's not here today. If he's not here, even if he showed up today, I don't think he plays in the Cincinnati game, which I think is very disconcerting for a first-round pick. We get you had the extra Hall of Fame game. I get you had extra 5 practices for Roquan Smith. But now it's on him. When do you want to come and play football? Obviously, the Bears have put their foot down. Obviously, your agents have put your foot down. But it's on you. When do you want to play? You have the Bengals game coming up. You need these reps. Nick Kwiatkowski is not going away without a fight.
You know, here's what's interesting, too, about the timeline that you were just referring to. I mean, ideally, you don't want to have to play him in the final preseason game. That's the one where you only play the guys you're going to cut the next day, right? I mean, that's the reality of the game, let's be honest. So you really only have, if he misses Cincinnati, you only have the Denver game and the Kansas City game to get him game action, unless you're going to throw him in there in that 5th preseason game, which you might have to do if this thing keeps going longer and longer. Here's another thing, though. If he doesn't get out on the practice field this week, maybe they, if they were to resolve this late next week, after, you know, where he couldn't play in Cincinnati, now you got him starting his practices in Denver against a different team.
Yeah.
So you have a rookie who's never had the pads on here at the NFL level, starting in, you know, practices against another team instead of his own teammates. And as we saw in Indianapolis a few years ago and New England a few years ago, those practices are a little bit more intense. They're a little bit more heated because you're actually going up against an opponent, not a teammate. And I don't know if that creates more of a chance of getting hurt or anything like that, but I don't know that that's ideal.
It's on him. It's on him. It's all on him right now, Roquan Smith. In terms of callousing, to use Matt Nagy's word, in terms of callousing his body, whatever he is doing, wherever he is at right now, is not the same thing as being out here in 95-degree weather
sure.
and practicing with your teammates in full pads. He's not in full pads going through contact drills.
That's the whole point of this, why we're all here in Bourbonnais. I mean, this is really the only time in the entire year. Once the regular season starts, they don't even wear pads. At Hallis Hall.
Yeah,
I mean, this is the time to callous your body.
He is behind the eight ball, the proverbial eight ball, for sure. I don't care how similar Georgia's defense is to Vic Fangio's. It's still a different language. He's still a rookie. You saw Lamar Jackson. I'm going to write about Roquan Smith in tomorrow sometimes. When Lamar Jackson scrambled the other night, right, he was so exceptionally fast at the college level, right? Yeah. Dynamic athlete. He won the Heisman for a good reason. DeAndre Hall, a fourth-round pick who's a third-string safety on here, closed on him so fast.
I saw that.
Yeah, it was an example of how the game speed is so starkly different at this level compared to the college level. So even though Roquan Smith is a top-10 pick, he's fast, he's physical, he's got everything you want in a linebacker. This level of competition, even from your fourth-round guys who are third-stringers on this roster, it's different. He's got to be here.
That's a good observation by you, because I noticed the same thing the other night with Lamar Jackson. It seemed like the speed of the game, he was struggling to adjust to it a little bit. We got another guy here in a Josh Bellamy jersey.
Brandon Marshall, actually.
Yeah.
But I'm Matt from Bourbonnais. But my question is, what's the deal with Aaron Lynch? Is he going to break the preseason with a starting job, or is he going to even be on the team, or what's the deal at outside linebacker? Are we going to sign someone? Or
yeah, you know, it's a great question, and I think it leads us to another conversation about the game the other night. But Aaron Lynch right now is, do we set the over under on snaps that he plays as a Bear at half a snap? It's like a valid question right now. Ever since this guy got signed in March, he's been hurt, and they've been supposedly small nagging injuries, but he hasn't practiced. It's not like he's coming in as an established dude in the league. I mean, he's had some flashes of good pass rush ability
3 years ago.
Exactly. And now, they're counting on him to fill a void. And there is a void right now, I think, at outside linebacker. Now, the good news is a couple young kids in that game the other night looked pretty good. But to answer your question about what Aaron Lynch is going to be, I don't know. We haven't seen him. We barely even saw him in OTAs because he was dealing with something else then. And he got hurt back in April at that extra mini camp that they got because they have a new head coach. So it's been tough to evaluate him. I do know he looks like a big, intimidating dude. I mean, he looks like a football player, but I don't know what he could do.
I hope he looks like a football player. That is the Bears' most pressing problem in the entire roster. You know, outside the Roquan Smith situation, what are you going to do at outside linebacker? You need Aaron Lynch to be something. Now, they've kind of constructed his contract to protect them a bit. It's full of incentives, which you would think would motivate him to play a bit more. But I don't know. You're not seeing him. And I think it speaks to the concerns a lot of teams had about him in terms of fitness and his want to. And here he is on the sidelines. Looking good on the sidelines, like you said. Looks like
now,
a football
player. Now, he does
look
engaged on the sidelines.
That's fine.
I mean, I saw
that's
him.
Fine.
I think he was holding like a clipboard today or something and was talking to one. You know, was
oh, so that's
one.
Progress? Okay.
I don't. I'm just. No, it's not. But, you know, we've seen other players that don't even show up out here during practices.
Yeah. The Bears need him. That is such a thin position and such an important position. Look, I think Vic Fangio can get something out of him. Aaron Lynch has 5 million reasons to want to be a productive player this year. But right now, he's losing that spot, that number three spot, to Isaiah Irving and Kylie Fitz, who both showed up in Canton.
That's a positive. And by the way, even if Aaron Lynch is healthy, I think if you're a Bears fan, you should be hoping that those younger dudes like Kylie Fitz, fourth-round pick this year out of Utah, and Isaiah Irving, who was an undrafted free agent but showed a lot of potential last year, that they emerge into legitimate options over, you know, what is Lynch, a fourth- or fifth-year guy now? Who's, you know, dealt with injuries and never put up, you know, huge production. That would be my preference. So that's the other side of this. I think that the other night was actually pretty encouraging from a pass rush standpoint. Yes, you're going up against backups. Yes, I mean, the Ravens didn't have, you know, guys like Marshall Yanda out there on the field. But, you know, for those guys to show, and not just on the edge, but you also had Roy Robertson Harris look pretty good.
Yep.
Jonathan Bullard. He was out. Yeah, Jonathan Buller played and looked pretty decent, too. Bilal Nichols, I've had a hard time keeping an eye on out here just because we're 100 yards away from all the plays. He looked pretty good in that game the other night. So there were some encouraging signs from young players in Canton.
Definitely a big positive to take away. And Kylie Fitz, again, in terms of, let's compare him to D'Anthony Miller. They've both looked good here. So to see him take that into a game after actually missing some practices with, what, an arm injury or something like that?
Yeah, he's something minor. I was actually unsure if he would even play the other night. So
I'm convinced.
He played a lot.
I'm convinced the Bears might get something out of him this year. He could be your number four option, but in third down situations, third and long, I think he can give you some speed off the edge for sure.
Yeah, I mean, really, Sam Acho's good enough to count on as kind of the run stuffer on the other side, if the D-line's also creating havoc, which I think the Bears have a good D-line. The question is, what the hell kind of depth is there if Leonard Floyd gets hurt again or doesn't develop into the guy that everybody... By the way, Matt Miller wrote a story the other day thinking Leonard Floyd's going to turn into...
a 12-sack guy.
Yeah.
And I've said this before on this podcast. If not this year, then never.
Yeah, it needs to happen now.
It's his third season in the league. Yes, you have durability concerns, but he should have a repertoire of moves at this point. He should have good hands at this point. He should take off in Vic Fangio's defense. So if not this year, it's not going to happen.
All right, we got another question here.
What's up, Mitch?
Hey, I'm Sean from Berwyn. Big fan. Yeah. So you guys
Berwyn!
Kinda
answered it already. I don't think anyone's ever said yeah about Berwyn.
Oh, yeah. So you guys kind of answered already, but I was asking about the duo of Irving and Fitz on the outside the other day. What do you guys thought?
Well,
we'll talk about Irving a little bit more then.
Yeah, Irving, to me, Irving looked pretty polished, I'll say. You know, like last year, especially in the preseason, we saw him create some havoc. But the other night just looked like he was a little bit more under control in his rushes. And, you know, they were effective, and they were struggling with him. You know, with Fitz, was it Fitz or Irving who had the offsides earlier?
I think it was Fitz.
Fitz, right? Yeah. So he, you know, you could tell that he was a little, you know, antsy. Yeah, you got to correct that. You can't be offsides. But he also came back and, I mean, both of them were getting pressure and showing their speed on the edge. I mean, I like what I saw from both guys.
I think they're counting on one of them to be something this year in the defense. I think they keep five outside linebackers. I think it's almost a certainty that they do. Isaiah Irving looks... he's buff now. He was kind of thin and athletic looking last year, but he said he put on like 10 or 15 pounds of muscle. Now he cut some fat, but he looks the part now. He had to callus his body, prepare himself for some NFL playing time, but he's been all right in camp. Now, I think Fitz has been better here in Bourbonnais, but I think to see him do something, to show something, to get after the quarterback, I don't care who it was, for the Ravens. I think that was promising for Irving because you need some young player to step up.
And I've also said this a lot. You know, if the defensive line is also creating a lot of pressure, and Akeem Hicks has kind of turned into somebody who most people just thought he was a, you know, run-stuffing tackle who couldn't even play every down, into somebody who's clearly an every-down player and also creates a good amount of pass rush. Eddie Goldman's the same way. I mean, Eddie Goldman can collapse a pocket, and then I really like what I saw from Roy Robertson Harris the other night, too. He's really changed his body and taken advantage of what is obviously some you know, good physical gifts that he has and that frame that he has, because, you know, he could also still be an edge rusher, but they decided to move him to the defensive line, and now he kind of has the versatility to do both.
Oh, he's impressive. Yeah. This is a guy they used as the gunner on the punt team in one point last year. I don't think that was the smartest decision of Jeff Rogers. I know you're a big Bears special teams guy, but
hey, I didn't have to tweet Bears special teams once the other night.
Refreshing, isn't it?
That was incredible.
I like Chris Tabor's drills here. A lot different than what Jeff Rogers put on the field. But anyway, going back to Roy Robertson-Harris, I just think...
Johns likes the special teams drills.
Yes. Okay. Who doesn't?
We'll just get that on the record.
It's usually the time to go and take a bathroom break here in Bourbon A. But to have him, in terms of his versatility, a guy who could be a gunner on special teams if need be, if you want to have some power out there, he's got a role on this team. He's not being cut. He's not going to be in the practice squad. He's going to be in that rotation.
All right, let's get another question here.
How you doing? I'm Mike from Chicago.
What's up, Mike?
You guys brought up the defensive line. And last, at the Hall of Fame game, a lot of the projected starters didn't play. But does it say anything that Jonathan Bullard was playing with Bilal Nichols, seeing who was going to get that last starting spot?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question, because you could say, oh, the fact that Bullard was actually playing isn't a good thing. I think the difference there is that's a legitimate starting battle.
Yes.
The Bears actually don't have a lot of starting battles going on right now. You know, there's probably one developing on the offensive line. On the defensive line, though, we've looked at that all summer as probably a battle between Jonathan Bullard and Roy Robertson-Harris to start. And maybe Bilal Nichols is good enough that he can throw himself into that conversation. I don't know. But right now, it seems like it's between those guys. And obviously, you're going to have a young dude like Roy Robertson-Harris get out there and play. He's still, you know, adjusting to that position switch. Remember, his whole rookie year, he was dealing with that illness and really didn't get out there on the field at all. So if you're going to have one guy from a competition play, you're going to let the other guy play too. I thought they both looked good. And I seem to be in the minority on this. I thought Bullard looked good last year when he was out there late. Once Mitch Unrein got hurt and was out there, I thought Bullard took advantage of the opportunities. I think he's had a good camp so far. And I got to say, I like the depth on the D-line right now a lot.
Bullard's, I guess, game action, I found it surprising because he is listed as the starter on the first depth chart. But there are some other interesting ones, too. Adam Shaheen played. Deion Sims played. Eric Kush, who's been your starting left guard, he played. So I think these guys that played are guys, hey, you don't have a locked up spot here. We want you to compete. You still need to get better. And you just look back at the history of Vic Fangio talking about Jonathan Bullard. He's always like pressing him. Never impressed enough. Likes the physical gifts, likes the first step, but he wants more. He's always continuously said that about Jonathan Bullard. I like you, but I need to like you a little bit more in order to play you a bit more. So, third-round pick, obviously you need to get something out of him. He is your penciled-in starter right now, but I just think those guys that were notable players who played in Canton, I think those are guys like Adam Shaheen's or Deion Sims, guys that need to improve and guys that are locked in big competitions on this roster.
Yeah, I don't know that there was a veteran, you know, established veteran. Like, I mean, Deion Sims may have been the one, maybe the most surprising guy, I thought, that played in that game. But you're right. I think that that's just as significant as a guy like Anthony Miller not playing.
Yeah. You know who else is a significant healthy scratch, or a baseball cap-wearing guy? Mm-hmm. Nick Kwiatkowski.
Yeah, I was just about to bring that up.
So if Roquan Smith was watching, and he better have been watching, this is not going to be some Martellus Bennett thing where he doesn't tune into his own team's games. It should not be. Nick Kwiatkowski did not play because he is your starting inside linebacker right now. Next,
well, right now, he's
Trevathan.
The number one guy they have because Trevathan's still not practicing.
Yes, well, he's doing a little bit more today. But Nick Kwiatkowski has earned that role. He's been really solid here at training camp. We're talking about a couple pick sixes on Mitch Trubisky, reading things right. Matt Nagy praised him a couple days ago. Again, Roquan Smith, Nick Kwiatkowski is not going away without a fight. He's more experienced than you at this level. He has been okay filling in the past for Jarrell Freeman. He's made some plays at this level already, and he's having a good camp right now.
Yeah, he is. And you have to think that that factors in there somewhere, right? If you're Roquan and his agents.
You would think the competitor. These guys call everybody a competitor. These players call themselves, you know, great competitors. Your competition is winning because you're not here and you can't do anything about it. Sign the contract.
Man, somebody's fired up.
Read about it in the Sun-Times tomorrow.
Okay. All right. Ooh, you're going after Roquan.
A little bit.
All right. We're expected to... hear from Bob Laguerre from Pro Football Weekly. Right now, just to kind of paint the picture, practice is over, at least it should be, and they're probably doing interviews right now with Matt Nagy and some players and things like that. So Bob's going to make his way over after that. We're going to talk to him a little bit about Brian Urlacher. Bob had covered his entire career. Also, you know, we'll find out if there's any news being made over there right now. I have to imagine Nagy's getting asked about Roquan Smith again, because that's just, you know, it's the biggest storyline of camp for a guy who's not even here, and it's got to be talked about. I know a lot of fans are just sort of annoyed, and I get it, because here's your first round pick and you just want him practicing, you just want him out there playing. And then meanwhile, in Nagy's own words last week, it is a stalemate, and I almost wonder how much they're even talking right now.
No, stalemate's not a good word. Not a good word to use to describe negotiations.
But I think it's also accurate.
Yeah. Which, today is day 20 of the lockout, correct?
The lockout.
Lockout, sorry. Holdout.
Yeah.
Holdout. Day 20. Joey Bosa's 131. Same exact agents. Same leading agent as Joey Bosa. So.
Yeah.
Not good.
What is your reaction to what you've been following, and you were in Canton for a little bit with Brian Urlacher?
How about Virginia McCaskey showing up at his party at... Hey, buddy. At 12:15 in the morning.
Yeah, I heard that story.
So they had their Brian Urlacher had his Hall of Fame party after the Hall of Fame game.
So that's starting pretty. I mean, it didn't end until like 11:15 Eastern time.
So Virginia McCaskey showed up fashionably late at 12:15 in the morning. How about that? That's my big takeaway from Hall of Fame weekend. He looks good in the jacket. I want to see his bust. I was able to walk through the Hall of Fame, but. How about Virginia McCaskey showing up?
That's some pretty good loyalty.
Yeah, absolutely.
95 years old, staying out till, I think she was there for an hour, I think is what the story was. Brian also said his kids stayed up the whole night with him, because I think the party went till like 5 a.m. Didn't he have to wake up for like that photo yesterday?
Yeah, yeah. They had a lot of stuff going on yesterday. He's officially in the Hall of Fame now. They had the induction ceremony yesterday. He's got a jacket and everything.
Right.
Today's just the speeches and whatnot.
Right. What's the over-under on Ray Lewis's speech?
I want to see him dance up
30
there.
Minutes?
Yeah. Yeah. I'll say this. When Brian Urlacher, I think this says a lot about Ray Lewis and Brian Urlacher, and I don't want to sound like I'm ripping on Ray Lewis because I think he's the best linebacker of all time. But when they were introduced during the game, you saw Brian Urlacher give everybody a high five on the Bears roster. And these other guys kind of just walked down the middle of the field. I think Ray Lewis did a little bit of a dance. He did high five.
Oh, he did his full dance.
He did his full dance. And I liked it. He should.
No, that was cool. Absolutely. Yeah.
I've always been a fan of the dance. Yeah. But to see Brian Urlacher, such an unassuming star, such an unassuming Hall of Famer, literally just walk by the Bears players and give them all high fives, I think that says a lot about who he is and how he wants to be remembered.
Yeah. Look, it's pretty cool to see 54 go in. It's well deserved. It's kind of when we were at the Super Bowl in January, and he officially, you know, was found out that he got in and was voted in. You know, that whole week we were talking about leading up to the vote whether or not he was a first ballot Hall of Famer, and now that seems silly. It's like, of course he was a first ballot Hall of Famer. Of course he should go in.
Yes,
and. You know, same thing with Ray Lewis, at least from what he did on the field. There's no question about it.
I think the concerns were you had Ray Lewis there, you had Randy Moss there. I had a good...
But two wide receivers ended up going in, too.
Yeah, so they usually don't like putting in two players from the same position, and it both happened. Terrell Owens should have been in a while ago. Such a great receiver. Obviously, that got a little bit political by the voters. But, yeah, Brian Urlacher is a first ballot Hall of Famer. What's your favorite... memory, because I want to kind of dispute one game. This may sound kind of confrontational or kind of controversial about my favorite Brian Urlacher moment, or a lot of people's favorite.
Are you going to go after the Cardinals game?
I am.
Okay, why?
So Brian Urlacher's defining game came against Matt Leinart.
Yeah.
In an over-the-hill Edgerrin James against a 1-4 team. He's had better games than that. Yes, he had 25 tackles.
I think it was specifically what he did in the fourth quarter when the Bears were losing. You know, the score wasn't 0-0.
He did not beat Brett Favre and the Packers.
They were undefeated and getting crushed on Monday Night Football by a bad
team. That's why people remember it, because it was Monday Night Football. And Dennis Green went nuts.
Because they were losing. Yeah, you know, if the Bears win that game 45-0, nobody remembers it, which I think is like the score they beat the Bills by a couple weeks before.
If Dennis Green doesn't go off after the game, do you even remember it a bit differently? Because that added that more helped. Flair. Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, that's sports, man.
Crown him.
That's how that nights like that live on forever. And for him, he was the best player on the field in the fourth quarter, just sideline to sideline, making every single play. I laughed. I was watching some of those highlights the other night from that game, and I forget if it was Joe Theismann or Tony Kornheiser, but they were talking about how Matt Leinart, how good he's going to be.
Again,
that was their takeaway for the game. They're like, oh, this guy's going to be really, really good.
I think he's had better games than that against better competition. You know, the old saying, if you want to be the best, beat the best. Still a phenomenal game by Brian Urlacher, but the more I thought about it, the more people were praising that game. It's Matt Leinart, man.
Sure.
Yeah. It's not Edgerrin James from the Colts.
Here's why he's in the Hall of Fame. You can argue about many, many good games that he had.
There you go.
Because he was excellent. I still think, unfortunately, the ending of his career still rubs me the wrong way.
Oh, I covered that
and,
closely.
Yeah, and that was like when you and I were actually on the beat covering Urlacher, you know, you could sense that it was starting to tail down a little bit. But not only the injury against the Seahawks and the Bears losing that game in the fashion that they did in overtime, and even in that time, you're like, well, is that the last time we see Brian Urlacher?
Yeah, I remember that day vividly. That was at the NFL owners' meetings. We were in Arizona at the Biltmore, and we had breakfast with Mark Trestman that morning, and he was praising Brian Urlacher, saying we're still in conversations with him. We've made it clear that we want him back. Thanks, Mark. Literally several hours later, you get the press release that Brian Urlacher is not coming back.
Yeah.
It was stunning the way they handled it. A legend. A legend.
Well, and that's what it was. I mean, Brian Urlacher didn't feel like he was getting the respect he deserved. I think that's true. I mean, you know, a guy like that who ends up being a first ballot Hall of Famer. That's not how. And then even the way they announced it, they send out that email. And my understanding is Brian didn't even know for sure at that point that was the decision being made.
Yes, I think he learned
via that email coming out and to the media and it getting reported. That's not how you handle a legend like that. And, you know, the people.
Even regular players like that.
Yeah, the people who made those decisions are all gone now. But, and the McCaskies have gone, you know.
Above and beyond.
Above and beyond since then to repair whatever damage there was.
And Ryan Pace, too. John Fox was involved in that, too. But it's a lot of their former players. It's part of the, I don't know, Pace way of life. He wants to have them around. I think we've seen them around a lot more, the older players, than we did during the Trestman era.
Well, that runs even deeper to, you know, current players. The reality is that Phil Emery rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. And so
someone just groaned out there.
I know. I think I just ruined that guy's day by saying those words.
It's already hot.
Which speaks to what I just said.
Yeah.
I mean, well, you know, and that's one thing I think we have to give Ryan Pace credit for, and even John Fox. You know, people there was John Fox fatigue, but Fox cared about that stuff too.
Yeah.
And was always good with his players and coaches and people you came in contact to. He wasn't good with the media. He didn't care about us, but that's not his job.
No.
Well, it's part of his job, but not as important.
Well, he was coordinating all three.
He was coordinating all three, yeah. So, by the way, earlier I think I said Kylie Fitz was a fourth-round pick. He's the sixth-round pick. The good news is the fourth-round pick, Joel Iwebuniwe. Oh, I screwed it up.
Try again.
Joel Iwebuniwe. I'm not cutting that out either. No, that's fine. That's fine. I usually get it right. I'm like 8 out of 10 usually.
I'm not even going to
try. It's like
my
free throw average.
They call him Mickey, and I'm going to call him that. He talks a big game.
He was out here practicing today, finally. Because we haven't really seen Iggy.
No.
That much.
Quadriceps injury? Does that sound right? Shoulder? I can't keep track of all of them right now. Shoulder?
Yeah, you know what?
Someone said shoulder?
It's right here in front of me. Shoulder problem is how I worded it. So it's good to see him. Because I noticed, you know, after the game, trying to evaluate what the rookies did the other night, the Bears' top four draft picks didn't play. That's not ideal.
But the other guys played
well. The guys that did played well. That's encouraging.
Okay, but Anthony Miller didn't play for good reason. He's been exceptional since camp opened. I think this is shaping up to be a pretty good draft class already. You know, you could tell last year, Tariq Cohen, he could be something. Even Adam Shaheen was making leaping catches over Jarrell Freeman. Now, if they allowed him to play a little bit last year, we could have a different story about him. But you saw signs of Eddie Jackson making takeaways out here during training camp. You had an early impression that Tariq Cohen, Eddie Jackson, that some of these guys were going to be something. Even like Jordan Howard a couple years ago, he had some hints that some of these guys were going to be something. So to see Anthony Miller be exceptional out here, to see Kylie Fitz flash his speed and Nichols' strength and Javon Wims stand out against the Ravens and Canton. Hello, Roquan Smith.
I know.
Come on down and join these guys who are this draft class that you have. They're impressing everybody. The Bears are very happy with what they got. You need to be here with them.
All right, let's talk about this coming week a little bit. How much of Trubisky do you think we're going to see Thursday night?
One series. Now, if it's a three and out, two series. Maybe five, six, seven plays.
So, in other words, and this was kind of what I was expecting to happen, the Hall of Fame game really was treated like a bonus. Now you kind of get on the same schedule we usually are with these games, which is your starters usually play about a series in the first game.
Yep.
Sometimes two, depending on the coach. Then the second game, maybe give them close to the whole first half, but usually a quarter and a half. Definitely the whole first quarter. And then that third preseason game is where they, you know, usually play into the third quarter. And then, like I said, that last one, if you're playing in that last game, that's not good.
Yeah, yeah. With Trubisky, it's similar to Nagy. It's all about the operation. It's hearing Nagy's play calls. It's barking the orders in the huddle, getting everybody lined up. What they're doing in these preseason games is not what we're seeing out here. What you saw, Chase Daniel running against the Ravens.
That wasn't Matt Nagy's offense
the other night. And that was more John Fox.
We should actually address that. We probably should have addressed it earlier because I know a lot of people weren't happy with Chase Daniel's performance the other night. And in general, you know, some of the things that were written after the game was, oh, yeah, the offense is still a work in progress. Well, of course it's still a work in progress. But that wasn't even the scheme. Like, that wasn't Matt Nagy's offense that you saw the other night. There's a lot more motion. There's, on every single play, you're going to see the Bears offense do something before the snap that is trying to get the defense to show how they're lined up, where the mismatch is. And Trubisky's whole job is to identify that. He's going to go to the under center or in the shotgun on every single play. Not every single play, but most plays with multiple options.
Yes.
And multiple options. Sometimes even run or pass. And it's his job to read the defense and make those plays. That's why I do. The fine line in the preseason this year is going to be how much of that to put on tape, how much of that to run, while also giving Trubisky the opportunity to do it. Because he needs the reps. He's going to need more than just practice reps. You're going to want to see some of that in-game action against a real opponent. Probably, ideally, that third preseason game when hopefully the Chiefs will scheme a little bit against. That's the other thing.
Oh, the defenses are very vanilla.
Neither team in that game the other night went into any... The Ravens weren't watching Bears tape before the game. The Bears weren't watching Ravens tape. There was no scheming at all whatsoever. There's not going to be on Thursday in Cincinnati either.
There is one play that reminded me of plays down here. It was the touchdown to Michael Burton where he came out of the backfield, kind of a slant in down the seam for the touchdown. They run similar things here, similar concepts here as well, and it was about finding the mismatch and a surprising mismatch. Michael Burton is a pretty capable receiver, and obviously Chase Daniel, Matt Nagy saw a mismatch they liked over the middle of the field, and it ended up being a pretty impressive touchdown, especially early on, despite the early turnover problems for Chase Daniel. So that was it, though. Anything else you saw, even the long Benny Cunningham run, some of that stuff, you know, so it's involved in Nagy's offense, but that was not what Matt Nagy is planning to run whatsoever come the regular season.
And the two interceptions that Daniel threw, the first one, Jordan Morgan got bull rushed straight into him, and I don't know if you noticed, Daniel's not a very tall guy. It's kind of his issue because in the very limited playing time he has received in his career, he's actually played pretty well. But when you're that short, there are limitations. I mean, even Drew Brees deals with that stuff. And he just kind of got a knack for getting up on his tippy toes and finding the throwing lanes. But that's when you got a guard that's bull rushed straight back into you, chances are you might throw it off the guy's helmet. And that's just that was kind of an unfortunate play that happened. Then I think, I don't know if it was miscommunication or what, but Deion Sims, it was obvious that Daniel thought he was just going to sit down on his route, and instead he stopped there for a second and decided to break out to the outside, and that was what created that interception.
Are we guilty of overanalyzing the Hall of Fame game?
Oh, I'm sure. But that's we got one game of football right now. What else are we going to go off of? That's the problem.
Yeah. It is good. A nice break from the monotony of camp, although this hot day... I guarantee you spice the things up for these.
We've had it really, not just this year, and I think we've talked about this past years. We've had it really, really good here in Bourbonnais weather-wise for a while. Remember Lovie Smith's 3 o'clock practices on a day like this?
Well, a lot
I
of
mean, thank God practice was at 8:15 today.
Well, the best thing about the Lovie Smith practice is it allowed everybody on the beat to stay out late. Can't do that anymore.
Because we did have that 1 3 o'clock practice to start camp.
Yeah. 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 The Tressman era was hot.
Well, Tressman had early practices, too.
Yeah. It was sticky, though.
Oh, you mean the weather. Yeah. Yeah, it was a little bit. It was a little bit. What else besides Trubisky this week?
Well, I'm going to see Anthony Miller play.
Anthony Miller getting a game. Kevin, I mean, I'm just sort of anxious to see Kevin White play.
What are your expectations against the Bengals for him?
For him? I mean, he's got to play just more. If he only plays one series like Trubisky, that means they're treating him like a starter. He's not even listed on their depth chart as a starter.
Well, he got the healthy scratch as a starter.
That's what I mean. So that my question is, you know, maybe they actually did treat that first preseason game like, all right, let's not bother. Let's not risk it. Going forward, though, you can't do that. You need to give him as many game reps as possible to see how good he actually is.
I want him to earn his spot in the roster. I don't want him to be give it to him.
Because he's not playing special teams for you. No, he's not one of your top three wideouts.
He is not part of that by any means. But Javon Wims, Tanner Gentry, we know Josh Bellman, we've talked about him. They're getting reps on special teams. They got reps against the Ravens as special teams. So Kevin White, it's receiver or bust, and people keep using that B word. We got a question.
Especially Potsy. Just kidding, Potsy. Go ahead, sir.
Oh, I'm not Potsy. I'm Phil from Plainfield. I saw a lot of tight end action today, a couple of tight end streaks. 84 looked really good. Ben, can you talk a little bit about, Miller's gone. You know, we signed him. He's not going to play, obviously. But can you talk a little bit about, you know, who you see as starting tight end, the depth there?
I wrote about this the other day in terms of what they're asking the tight ends to do. They all call it fun. Deion Sims has a new lease on life. Right now, he's no longer the in-line blocking guy every single snap that he's on the field. So he feels refreshed. He feels rejuvenated by what Matt Nagy's asking him to do. Do you see some of these formations out there? I mean, they're tight end heavy, but they're not in line. This is not a run and pound it formation. They are out wide attacking you. So I think it starts in terms of the depth chart, in terms of your question. It goes Trey Burton, Adam Shaheen, kind of slash Deion Sims. That's your starting point. And then after that is Daniel Brown. I don't think Daniel Brown had a very good game against the Ravens, but
he also didn't even play till late.
Yes, but yeah. So him and Ben Broniker, I feel like they've been competing for a couple of years now for that final roster spot in terms of the tight ends and special team snaps. I think Brown has a leg up when it comes to special teams, but your first three tight ends, it's Trey Burton, Adam Shaheen, and Deion Sims, and I'm telling you, there is a place for Adam Shaheen in this offense. People were concerned because he's not the move tight end that Trey Burton is. Matt Nagy was hired to be a creative offensive mind. If he can't find a role for a second-round pick as big as Adam Shaheen, then he's not the creative offensive mind everybody thought he was. He has not had this type of pairing before. He has not had a second-round pick be his number two tight end. He didn't have that in Kansas City. He didn't see it with the Eagles don't have it with Zach Ertz. Adam Shaheen could be a kind of a special hidden component to this offense, especially when you get into tight areas and the red zone and stuff like that. He has a role on this team.
Shaheen has he had a nice catch in the end zone too, and we saw that a lot last year in OTAs, minicamp before the pads went on, and then it seemed like when the pads went on, there was a little bit of adjustment that he struggled with a little bit. And then now I think this year out here in camp with the pads on, we're seeing him make more and more plays. He had a nice catch in the back corner of the end zone on a fade route from Trubisky. I don't think technically I'm allowed to say that, but I just did. Gives away the whole playbook.
We got
to
delete this whole podcast. Start over.
The Bears are going to throw a fade to the corner at some point this season. The Packers now have it on tape.
He's a mismatch, especially in the red zone. Look, he's not the fastest guy. Even Matt Nagy, I like this about Nagy. He's honest about his players and his assessments. He goes, there's not a lot of wiggle to Nadim Shaheen, but he's big. He's got soft hands. And when there's only 5 yards in the goal line, he could beat a lot of these cornerbacks. And a couple days ago, we saw him take out Michael Joseph and DeAndre Hall, leaping catch over them. And then, again, speaking to Nagy's offense and finding those mismatches, with a couple motions, he got Adam Shaheen one-on-one against Bryce Callahan. Bryce Callahan is a pretty good nickelback, but he's 5'9". When you're in the red zone, I'm taking Adam Shaheen at 6'3". What is he, 6'5"? 6'5", 200-something pounds over Bryce Callahan, who's 5'9", maybe 180 pounds, dripping wet. Give me Shaheen in that instance.
You know, the thing that encourages, well, not only encouraging, but is really interesting to me about the tight ends is how different all three of them are. I mean, Burton is not the giant guy that Shaheen is. Sims is more of a blocker. And I'm really fascinated to see how Nagy kind of works all three of those guys in and fits them in different spots, because they're all three completely different players. What's up, Bob?
Hey,
Laguerre,
Bob Laguerre's
in the
house. Here. He's covered this team since Sid Luckman.
Just after. It was my second year on the beat.
You've never heard that one before, right, Bob?
No.
Yeah. So should we start with the 10-pointer I put on you in bags, or should we talk about Brian Urlacher?
Let's end with that one, because I got to leave early.
Oh, well, one of the big reasons we wanted to get you on is Bob Laguerre. He's been covering the Bears. Well, seriously, what was your first year covering the Bears?
1942.
Oh, wow. It's even longer than I thought. I thought it was 52. You saw Brian Urlacher's whole career.
I did.
Can you remember back at the start of his, you know, the first couple of years maybe that he was here? When did it kind of dawn on you that, oh, man, this guy is a different animal?
Almost from the beginning, and the thing that stood out was in his rookie year, they didn't think he could play middle linebacker. They played him at strong side, and they figured they'd break him in that way. And I think it became apparent to them right away that this guy was the ideal middle linebacker in the cover two scheme they were playing. I think by his second or third year, it was obvious this guy was going to be a perennial Pro Bowler and maybe a Hall of Famer. That was a little early to say that, but he talks about how when he got here from day one, they talked about Mike Singletary, Dick Butkus, all the great linebackers that had come before him, and he said, you know, he always thought that was unfair to those guys because he hadn't done anything. But I think by year two or three, it was pretty obvious that he was going to be a guy who could step right in with those guys and be mentioned in the same breath.
What's your favorite Brian Urlacher moment game? I just spent about 5 minutes ripping that Cardinals game. That came against Matt Leinart and Edgerrin James. So don't say that game, Bob.
Because Edgerrin James was bad.
At that point in his career, he was. And, go on, Bob.
Well, the big thing is, and he will be the first guy to admit it, that he never got blocked in that game. He was running free to the ball all game. And it almost seemed like a Brian Urlacher highlight tape because he was in on every play in the second half. And to me, that game stands out. But there were other games. You know, you saw the big hits he made at the line of scrimmage on ball carriers. But the amazing thing is, a guy who's 6'4", 258, could drop into coverage, and he's what made that cover two scheme, because you could not get the ball over him. When he dropped, you could not throw deep down the middle of the field, and he could cover sideline to sideline. And I don't know that he ever got enough credit for what he did in pass coverage and what he did as a guy in that defense. And he had, I don't know how many interceptions, but a lot, and he was a playmaker. Other than the big tackles, he forced turnovers, he created turnovers, he recovered balls that were on the ground, and he just had incredible range. And for a guy that big with that speed, it was, you know, there was nobody in the league at that time that had what he did.
This might not be an easy question to answer, but did Brian Urlacher help Lovie Smith more, or did Lovie Smith help Brian Urlacher more?
I would definitely say Brian Urlacher helped Lovie Smith more. The cover two was not a brand new scheme. Lovie Smith himself said they ran that when he was a high school player in Texas. So a lot of teams ran that scheme. Nobody ran it as well as they did with Urlacher in the middle. And they will tell you that that's the key to that defense, is having a middle linebacker who can patrol the middle of the field and not only play pass defense, but play sideline to sideline against the run. So, you know, I think the credit goes to Brian Urlacher. He would have been great in any scheme, though.
He was also the unassuming leader that Lovie needed in that locker room. He didn't like dealing with the media. He didn't like all the attention. He was always a small-town kid. But in terms of his leadership, what kind of resonated with you in terms of who he was in that locker room and how he should be remembered there?
Well, it was all by example. And he was a guy who from day one was, you know, I refer to him as the reluctant superstar. He didn't want the attention. He didn't want the accolades. He wanted it to be shared with all the guys on his defense. And when he came in his first couple years, when he interviewed, he would look down at the ground with a ball cap pulled over his head, mumble, and talk really, really fast. And everyone thought, well, you know, he hates the media. He's a, you know, he's a surly type guy. Well, it wasn't that at all. It was that he felt bad that he had 20 people at his locker talking to him, and his teammates, guys who had been in the league for 5 or 10 years, were basically ignored by the media. So he was self-conscious about that, and he just wanted to, and he said even in his speech tonight, it's not his day. It's a chance for him to thank other people who helped to get him where he was, because he never imagined that he would get to the Hall of Fame. And, you know, basically he just wanted to be one of the guys. He didn't want to be the superstar. He didn't want to be the face of the franchise. But I think he eventually grew into the role.
Yeah, and that's why I thought it was so interesting the other night. He gave a speech to the Bears before the Hall of Fame game. And then he said afterward, he's like, that's the first time I've ever done that in my life. That he had never, you know, done the pregame speech. You would have thought that here's the leader of the team, the face of the franchise for that many years, that at some point before the game in the locker room he would have gotten the guys riled up, but that just wasn't him.
No, he wasn't. He was a guy who was more than content to be just another guy in the defense, and he realized early on that he was something special. He just didn't want to be treated that way. And when he came onto this defense, there were veteran guys in the locker room, guys who were established leaders, so he didn't have to do that. And I think he became more of that as his career went on. But there were always other guys who would step into that vocal role. He was more a leader by demonstration.
Well, he's that water carrier guy, and sometimes the best captains are just guys, you call them lead by example, or they stay in the shadows, and they lead through that way. In terms of who's next, you've covered the entire career of Lance Briggs. You've covered the entire career of Devin Hester. Charles Tillman, too. Do any of them have a chance, in your opinion, in seeing the Hall of Fame?
To me, the only guy that would get my Hall of Fame vote, if I had one, would be Devin Hester, because he changed the game. He was the best at what he did in the history of the game. There were other guys like Brian Mitchell who were close, but Devin Hester was a guy who, he changed the way you watched the game. If you were watching the game at home, you did not get up to make a sandwich when the other team was punting or kicking off, because there was the possibility that every time he touched the ball, something big could happen, and usually it did. I mean, and he came up huge at the biggest times. The Cardinal game is one, the Super Bowl is another. So to me, if you mention return specialists to anybody who watched football for the last 30 years, the first name they're going to mention is Devin Hester. And it doesn't matter what he did as a wide receiver. And I think he could have been a better wide receiver than he was. And he had a couple big years. But just by what he did on special teams, he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I mean, I think sometimes we forget it's a museum, too. And to me, if you're the best kick returner of all time and you change the game that many times,
you should be there.
You should be noted, and you should be put in this museum that is telling the history of the game. I mean, that's the way I look at it.
Well, if kickers and punters are in, and they've started,
what do you get against kickers and punters?
And this is the guy who's scoring
better than a kicker or a punter.
Yeah, he was scoring the touchdowns.
Yes.
So, all right, Bob, I'm going to ask you to be our insider for the day right now, too, because I'm assuming you're over there in the press conferences. Any news today that we should be talking about?
As far as Roquan Smith, the usual, nothing. Nagy said there's no news, didn't want to talk about it, which is understandable. as far as news, Javon Wims talked, and he had a huge game. And so did Kylie Fitz. He also spoke. But what Matt Nagy said that was of interest to me was that, yeah, these guys played a great first preseason game. That's great. It's in the books. Forget about it. You've done that. Move on. Because he said the tendency is for a lot of guys when they have, well, young guys, have a big game to coast. He said, you know what, one good preseason game, especially a preseason opener, is not going to get you a spot on the 53-man roster. So these guys got to get back to work.
I don't think everybody knows this here, but you are an exceptional bags player. Cornhole, whatever you want to call it. He is phenomenal. You also beat Brian Urlacher a couple times, did you not, here at Bourbonnais?
I beat him once, but he beat us three or four times. And it was interesting, the first time we played him, I think it was 08, maybe 07, we were out there. There were four people on the deck at TJ's. And so we got a game with him and Lance Briggs. And by the middle of the second game, there were 200 people on that patio. They were overflowed into the parking lot. And he had been talking earlier about how he didn't like the publicity and all the people around him. And he finally said, guys, I got to dip out. I get it. I know what you're talking about now, because it was like being in a zoo with people just watching Brian Urlacher throw bags.
Okay, who won?
Well, what they didn't know is they were there to see you.
You, yeah, your local legend, bags hero.
They were there to see Larry Mayer, let's be honest.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. How did that game finish? You're burying the lead here.
He needed to throw one in the hole in the third game, which was the rubber match, and the space was about this big, and he threw it up. It went straight in the hole, and he looked at me and he goes, "Hey, dude, did that go in?" I'm like, "Yeah, you know it went in."
So he could talk a little trash too.
Hall of Fame bags player too.
So where does the 10-pointer I put up on you last week put in? List on the Bourbonnais ranks.
I think I was just hindered by my partner. I was so despondent and depressed over the guy I had to play with.
Larry Mayer. The Chicago Bears website writer
is the worst bags player in America. Into the gutter with him.
All right. Well, when are you running for mayor of Bourbonnais, by the way?
You know what? As long as Larry Mayer is my campaign manager, I think I'd have a shot, because he pretty much knows everybody.
He does.
Especially the 21-year-old women.
This is a PG podcast.
That was the PG version of saying that. If we were actually at Don Lynn's later tonight, it would come out much different. All right, Bob, thanks for stopping by. Appreciate it.
All right, take care.
Read them in Pro Football Weekly, profootballweekly.com. Bob does a great job. You can just leave that there. It's fine. It's all good. We need to get out of here. We already ran over our time and when we were supposed to be done. But we really appreciate everybody came out here. A lot of you guys sat here the whole show. And,
thank you so much.
We really do appreciate all of our listeners. That's why we want to continue to do these live podcasts to give you an opportunity to come out and meet you guys and just have some fun. So this was a great opportunity today.
Yeah, it's almost probably one of the coolest spots here in the shade. I'm hot back here. There's no ventilation.
And there's
back
a lot
here.
Of bugs in here. I don't know why, but
they came with Bob.
Now he can't defend himself. That's not nice. All right. Follow us on Twitter at Adam Hogue, H-O-G-E, at Adam Johns, J-A-H-N-S. Again, our producer, Joe Romano, thanks to him. He does great work for us all season long, handles those voicemails. I can't wait to dive into those voicemails soon. Maybe like the third preseason game, we could do like a run-through, like a preseason version.
Because Roquan's still not playing.
Yeah, exactly. Well, man, if he's not even playing in that game, then the Bears definitely have a problem. And our great engineer, Ernie Skadden, the voice of the show, right? Something like that, the voice of the open. Read us at WGNRadio.com/BearsChicagoSunTimes.com. Most importantly, tell your friends about the podcast. Search Hogan Johns, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn. It's all there. Please rate and review it. We appreciate you doing that. Johnsy, any final thoughts here today?
No. It's good to be back here in Bourbonnais. A few more days, then we're off to Cincinnati.
And there it is.
There we go.
Why without the clothes music? We will be in there. Cincinnati. I feel like we've been in Cincinnati a lot.
Still better than Cleveland.
No argument there. Don't ask Joakim Noah about Cleveland. All right. That's going to do it for episode 164. We will talk to you again probably later this week. Enjoy your week, everybody.
Thanks, everyone.